Evening, beloved. Let's continue in Proverbs. Okay, we're going to finish up tonight the latest trilogy that we've been on. We've looked at the concept of marriage and what Solomon has to say about it. Husband and wife, particular. And then secondly, we looked at the relationships that ought to exist between parents and children. And now tonight, to round out the trio, we want to look at friends and neighbors. What does Solomon have to say? And that's all we're doing. We're looking at, would you call that a biblical theology, if you want the technical term for it? Biblical theology is you only look at what one book of the Bible says about the subject. And so that's what we're doing, okay? Friends and neighbors tonight. Turn to chapter 17. We're going to be all over the book, as we always are, but we'll start there, chapter 17. An old British statesman named G.K. Chesterton, he said that, God commanded us to love both our enemies and our neighbors because usually they were the same people. I think back on the neighbors I've had in my life, and I can honestly say we haven't had any that were just, well, as a kid we did, actually. I forgot about that. But once we got past early childhood, it was pretty good sledding from there on in. Our neighbors were fundamentally also our friends, and that's always a good thing. And I didn't realize it at the time, but I realize now that that's actually the biblical ideal. The Hebrew word actually encompasses both of those concepts, friends and neighbors. Very simple. Ra'ah. Ra'ah. The word, just ra, that's evil. Ra'ah is a friend and or a neighbor. And so that's the word we're going to be looking at. Okay? So we'll include both meanings, friend and neighbor, with that word because the Old Testament does. It used in both contexts. And fundamentally, what's true of a friend should also be true of a neighbor, at least as much as it lies within us. The Bible says, and elsewhere, that we should live peaceably with all men as much as it lies within you. And so that's Proverbs is no exception of that. So let's look at all, first of all, of what is the Solomonic basis for friendship? Well, Proverbs alone, if we're just looking at Proverbs tonight, and we are, Proverbs makes it clear that true friendship is based actually on love, because only love is the thing that can endure the absolute tests that are guaranteed to come your way, tests that friends will experience as they travel through life together. Notice verse 17, which I think takes in indirectly that concept at least. A friend loveth at all times. That's good times and bad times, right? And a brother is born for adversity. I'm sure we all realize that it's possible to have many companions and yet no real friends. There's a big difference between people that you rub shoulders with and people that actually care about you and vice versa. Notice chapter 18, verse 24. A man that hath friends must show himself friendly, and there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. So friendship is something that is, it's got to be cultivated, all right? And the roots have to go very deep. Can't have shallow roots in this thing. Very deep roots it has to have. And God's people need to be particularly careful in picking friends. Chapter 12, verse 26, addresses that very thing. It says, the righteous is more excellent than his neighbor, but the way of the wicked seduceth them. Right? The righteous man, in other words, needs to choose his friends very carefully because it's just very important. If you don't, you're going to wind up with being a companion of a fool, a wicked man, and you will inevitably be influenced by that, which happens every single day. Notice chapter 13 and verse chapter 13 and verse 20. He that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. So friendships, very amazing things. Friendships that are, at least some of them anyway, that are based on certain things will fail. Like a friendship that's based on money. Notice chapter 14 and verse 20. The poor is hated even of his own neighbor, but the rich hath many friends. you probably have a hard time believing that. And there's many other verses we can look at that say the same thing. People don't like to win the lottery for only one reason. All of a sudden, friends pop up out of the woodwork. And that's always going to be the case. So a friendship that's based on money, not a good thing. A friendship that's based on sin, and there are lots of friendships that are based on sin. Misery loves company. Evil yields itself to evil. And those things are destined to be disappointing. There's actually two big chunks in Proverbs that talk about friendships being based on the fact that both parties love the same kind of sin. And that's really how a lot of friendships are based in the world. You know, you enjoy certain things that are really off limits. Notice chapter 16, verse 29. A violent man enticeth his neighbor and leadeth him into the way that's not good, right? Bad influence on a neighbor. He shutteth his eyes, verse 30, to devise froward things. Moving his lips, he bringeth evil to pass. Friendship that's based on sin will absolutely wind up being, it'll be gravel in your mouth for sure. So are friendships with people that have very, very short fuses. Right, very bad tempers. Chapter 22, verse 24. Make no friendship with an angry man. With a furious man, thou shalt not go. Why not? Lest thou learn his ways and get a snare to thy soul. That's evidently something else that can rub off on somebody, this anger, bad temper. And friendships that are based some kind of sick attraction of people that speak foolishly in chapter 14 and verse 7. 14:7, go from the presence of a foolish man when thou perceiveth not in him the lips of knowledge. They do things like they rebel against authority. That's never a wise thing. Chapter 24. And verse 21 says, my son, fear thou the Lord and the king, and meddle not with them that are given to change. Why? Verse 22, for their calamity shall rise suddenly, and who knoweth the ruin of them both? Right? Dishonesty. People are attracted to dishonesty. They think it's an easy way to get gain. And Solomon says, if you're basing a friendship on that, then you are to be pitied. Okay. Chapter 29 and verse 27. An unjust man is an abomination to the just, and he that is upright in the way is abomination to the wicked. So what a Christian needs to do is basically, I mean, we went through that little exercise there. What a Christian needs to do is basically pay attention to and actually believe Psalm 1, right? Especially the first two verses. Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night. Okay? You should pay attention to passages like 2 Corinthians 6 and verses 14 through 18. Come out from among them and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and I will receive you. Show your fidelity to me by separating yourself from things that are going to destroy you and things that degradate my holy name. So very, very important, right? Basises for friendships. Secondly, we want to look at what are some of the qualities of true friendship? Now, I've already mentioned love. I think that's actually obvious. True love produces something. It actually produces several things. But true love, if you really love someone, you'll be loyal to that person, right? There's never greater hypocrisy than someone says, I love you, and they're completely disloyal to you. True love presents itself in realms of loyalty. And that's what chapter 17, verse 17 says, right? A friend loveth at all times. And chapter 18, verse 24, there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. All right, you're committed to it. You're not a fair weather friend, in other words. In fact, if you really have a great friend, sometimes that friend, or friends plural, will do more for you in an emergency than your own relatives will. And people have found that to be true. By the way, that according to Solomon, that loyalty ought to extend to your parents' friends. Chapter 27 and verse 10 says, thine own friend and thy father's friend forsake not, neither go into thy brother's house in the day of thy calamity, for better is a neighbor that is near than a brother far off. I remember my dad had some amazing friends when I was growing up. I couldn't imagine abandoning those guys. I mean, they're all long gone. My dad's like the only one left of everybody I ever knew, really. And we lived in a very condensed town. He was a fireman, so there was a big fraternity of men that we knew. Plus, he carried a second job his whole life in a pharmacy, and we knew we had the pharmacist would hire the firemen whenever they were off, and so that was quite a fraternity those guys had. But I can't imagine abandoning those guys. I mean, they were wonderful guys. And they proved to be a blessing. Longtime family friends can be a blessing, not just in a single generation, but from one generation to the next, particularly within the household of God. The Christian friends should be this very way. Now, let me just mention five different qualities of real friendship. And I'm not thinking these up. I only found these in Proverbs. Okay, now there's other qualities. You can go to, 1 Samuel and look at the relationship between Jonathan and David and learn a lot about friendship there. I mean, a ton. We're not even going to take any of that in, okay? Just Proverbs, okay? So, number one, first quality of a real friendship is that true friends know how to keep a confidence. They know how to keep a confidence, okay? Notice chapter 25 and verse 9. 25:9. Debate, that means plead your cause, okay? Debate thy cause with thy neighbor himself, and discover not a secret to another. Why not? Lest he that heareth it put thee to shame, and thine infamy turn not away. Somebody will blab something that you trusted, that you said to someone in confidence, and loose lips sink ships. You ever hear that? It's actually true. And, you shared something you shouldn't have shared with a blabbermouth, and the next thing you know, you're in trouble. You don't want that. If you have a disagreement with someone, people are never going to get along 100% of the time. So you have a disagreement with somebody, and don't bring another person into your personal escapade with that person, all right? Don't bring in a third party into the discussion because you betrayed a confidence. And if you do, you're very likely to end up losing, first of all, your reputation, okay? You will definitely lose that. In fact, you've heard people say this, right? You've said it. You've heard other people say it about other people. You can't trust that guy with anything confidential. Don't tell that guy. You know that there's people that are notorious for that. All right? And your friend who trusted you with his private thoughts. Look at 11, verse 13. A talebearer revealeth secrets, but he that is of a faithful spirit concealeth a matter. All right? So, you know, somebody that just has to spill the beans all the time on people, whether it be true or false, they betray confidence. A trustworthy man is somebody that can keep a secret. Okay? By the way, you never tell anybody something to get at another person. You're telling them, hoping that they'll be a faithful confidant and a counselor to you. That's the only reason you never want to share anything anyway. So if you aren't careful, this kind of thing can utterly, completely, and totally destroy a friendship. Chapter 16 and verse 28. 16:28 says, a froward man soweth strife, and a whisperer separateth chief friends. So the wise thing to do is you cover an offense like that with a genuine sacrificial love. Chapter 17, verse 9. He that covereth a transgression seeketh love, but he that repeateth a matter separateth very friends. Okay? Very, very straightforward stuff, huh? Very straightforward. So, number one, qualities of friendship. A real friend is someone that will keep your confidence. You can trust them. Number two, now the same line of thinking, but now in a broader way, okay? True friends, or a good neighbor for that matter, friends and neighbors, right, have the ability to control their mouths, all right? Not just keeping a confidence. In general, they can control their mouth. Notice 11, chapter 11 and verse 9. A hypocrite with his mouth destroyeth his neighbor, but through knowledge shall the just be delivered. All right. Should you believe the very first thing that you hear about someone else? Should you? I think in almost 99.9% of the cases, the answer is no, because it needs to be verified as a fact. Okay. It could absolutely be wrong. At least according to chapter 18 and verse 17, it could absolutely be wrong. He that is first in his own cause seemeth just, but his neighbor cometh and searcheth him, you see. Chapter 11, verse 2, a man that has understanding is someone that can hold his tongue. So you have a neighbor, you have a friend, all right, and they speak falsely to you. What should you do? And you find out that they lied to you or they slandered someone for no reason. Talk to them about it privately, all right? Don't try to get even by now lying about them, all right? You know, you don't do tit for tat that way. At least friends don't do that anyhow, especially not according to chapter 25 and verse 18. 25:18 says, a man that beareth false witness against his neighbor is a maul and a sword and a sharp arrow. Wow. A maul is like a club, you know, like banging your foot with a club. Okay. Now, here's a great verse that you ought to read. Right, mark this one down. Chapter 26, verse 18. Now, here's a guy, he's just vicious, right? Or a troublemaker. He's just stirring up strife. You know, he's mocking, he's cruel. Not wise use of the tongue. And then he'll say, I was only kidding, right? Was he really only kidding? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. How do I know? Because of chapter 26 and verse 18. 26:18, as a madman who casteth firebrands, arrows, and death, So is the man that deceiveth his neighbor and saith, am not I in sport? I'm just fooling around. Right? He's hurling all these horrible things at you with his mouth or any other way. So I'm just kidding. He's not kidding. He's vicious. All right? Beware of that. All right? We need to understand that. Okay. So, qualities. Quality number one, a real friend will always keep your confidence. Number two, a real friend, you'll pick him as a friend because they have control over their mouth, which James says is the most unruly member of the whole human anatomy, set on fire by hell, actually. Okay, number three, quality number three, a real friend, a real neighbor will be lovingly, capital L, lovingly honest with you, right? He's going to shoot straight with you. See chapter 27, you know chapter 27, verse 6 already. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. In other words, true friends in the Lord, that friendship cannot possibly be built around deception. That's just impossible. Even if the truth hurts, and many times it does, all right, it can never harm if the motivation is correct, all right, if it's done in love. Better that you speak the truth in love, like Paul says in Ephesians 4, because the Spirit of God can use the truth and the love in which it was conveyed to build character. The complete opposite of that is the devil, who uses nothing but lies and flattery in order to tear things down. Flattery is like being lined up for a firing squad. It's just that dangerous. It's that deadly, at least according to chapter 29 and verse 5. Right? A man that flattereth his neighbor spreadeth a net for his feet. All right, he's building you up, puffing you up, and really what he's doing is he's getting your coffin ready for your burial as he's flattering you. Really, really an amazing thing. And you compare chapter 28 and verse 23. He that rebuketh a man afterward shall find more favor than he that flattereth with the tongue. So, you know, it's been well said, I think, that flattery is manipulation. It's not communication. We foist it off as communication, but it's actually just manipulation. And now think about it. What honest person would ever want to manipulate a real friend? Is that real friendship, manipulation? I don't think so. Now, no one, if you're lucky enough to have a friend, I don't believe in the word luck, don't misunderstand me. If you're fortunate enough, if you're blessed enough to have a real friend or more than one, you should never take that person for granted and just assume that they're going to immediately forgive you for your offenses, even though that's what they should do. That's what Christians do. They forgive, right? Chapter 18 and verse 19. 18:19, a brother offended is harder to be won than a strong city, and their contentions are like the bars of a castle. Wow, that's powerful. Now, it's strange, though true, that some of God's people, they'll actually forgive offenses from unbelievers that they would never forgive from a Christian friend. That would commit the exact same thing. And there's many reasons for that. Maybe because they expect more, they're more hurt because they trusted that person more. I'm not sure. Every case is different. But you know what? Here's the deal. How do you cut a diamond? How do they cut diamonds? A diamond is one of the hardest rocks in the world. It takes a diamond to cut a diamond. Okay? And some Christians have a way of putting up defenses that even the church can't break through. Now, if somebody in an assembly offend someone, and it's a serious offense, does anybody know what should be done? You know, the New Testament actually gives us a protocol for what should be done. It's in Matthew 18, right? Step one, go to the person and tell him his offense. He says, I disagree. I don't think I did anything wrong to you. I don't think I did anything wrong, period. All right, now bring a witness. It's got to be a real witness. You can't just go get a kangaroo court and make up a, you know, grab somebody to be on your side that didn't see anything. All right, now you come with a witness, and now two of you approach the person and tell him his fault, and if he still won't repent, he still won't get right with you, then if it's serious enough, you bring him to the church. So it's kind of a three-step process there, covered very thoroughly in Matthew 18, around verses 15 all the way down to 35. You got the steps there when these kinds of things happen. And it, right in that context there, the Lord's warning, if you will not forgive this person, you're actually jailing yourself. It's like putting yourself in prison for obvious reasons, I think. Okay? According to Proverbs, true qualities of a friend, they keep a confidence. They're able to control their tongue. They are honest with each other. They don't snow each other, flatter each other. They speak honestly to each other. All right, and they, fourthly, they counsel and encourage each other. All right, they build each other up. Chapter 27 and verse 9. 27:9 says, ointment and perfume rejoice the heart. But here's what else does. So doth the sweetness of a man's friend by hearty counsel. Yeah. Just like those fragrances can delight a man's senses or a lady's senses, all right, the sweetness of a good friend's words can be even more powerful. Amazing images that Solomon uses in it, the metaphors, the images of oil and perfume. Those are fine things when a discussion is pleasant. But what's it like when friends disagree? Well, as iron sharpeneth iron, so a man can sharpen the countenance of his friend. In chapter 27 and verse 17. Right? If we're not disagreeable, there's a difference between disagreeing and being disagreeable. If you're disagreeable, you're just looking for a fight all the time, right? If you're not that way, then we usually learn. You learn more through mistakes and errors and disagreements than by giving in and refusing to say what really is the issue, okay? And again, it's a matter of speaking the truth in love. Now, the context of Ephesians 4 there is ministry. Wise ministers that say hard things to people sometimes, but they're true, and that's what they need. Well, that's a trans Christian application. I think we should be that way with one another as well. All right. Finally, fifth quality: friends and neighbors. All right, they have to exercise tact. And they need to be sensitive to each other, right? They need to realize that's a human being with feelings. They may put up a strong front, but sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me. That's garbage, all right? Names hurt. Things hurt. And everybody has feelings, unless you're so calloused and so given over to Satan that you don't have any feelings anymore. I guess there are people like that. But most normal human beings still have some feelings. And over common sense things that really demand some element of wisdom. Like, here's a person, he just binds. We had some guys in college. We call them binders. They were always by you. They would never leave you alone, right? Well, if you spend too much time together, there's such a thing as wearing out your welcome. You know, you're calling me every day. You're with me. I mean, you want to be together because you love each other. But there's a limit. You should be able to sense when enough is enough. I mean, you know, stuff like that. In fact, Solomon even talks about it in chapter 25 and verse 17. 25:17 says, withdraw thy foot from thy neighbor's house. Get out of your neighbor's house. Why? Lest he be weary of thee and so hate thee. What's that comical saying? I forget it now. 3 days, you start smelling like fish or something. Something like that. I forget what it is. But, you know, it's kind of true. I've seen people that, I've seen it in my life, and so have you probably. They bound someone so badly, I mean, they wouldn't give them any breathing room ever. And you wind up destroying what could have been and should have been a strong friendship. It actually can destroy the friendship by not having some simple common sense about the fact that people just need space every now and then. Right? That's how you grow. You can't, if you're going to grow, you need space to do it in. And space comes from things like privacy. Privacy is important. Now, if you're too private, you're private all the time, that's a bad thing. Okay? But there's balance in life. There's a place for solitude, and we need to respect each other's needs for that. All right? Even husbands and wives, believe it or not, need to respect each other's privacy and not be constantly evermore together. Otherwise, the love will not ever mature. You got to give the people that you love space a little bit. And I think we understand what that's about. Chapter 27, verse 14. 27:14. He that blesseth his friend with a loud voice, rising early in the morning, it shall be counted a curse to him. You know, he just spent all night with you last night. You just wake up, the rooster just crows. There he is. Hello, good morning, neighbor. Oh, my God, I thought I was done with you for a while. You want to try to avoid that. So beware of the friend that loudly, frequently praises you, tells you, oh, what a great friend you are, right? Because if the friendship is real, you don't need any of that. You don't need these dramatic antics to convince the other one that you really care for him or her or whatever the case may be, all right? Especially if they wake you up to do it. So love is sensitive to other people's feelings and their needs. And I've just been picking on one area of sensitivity, okay? And true friends try to say the right thing at the right time, and particularly they ask God for help to do it the right way, because there's a right way and a wrong way to do such a thing. Chapter 25, verse 20, as he that taketh away a garment in cold weather, and as vinegar upon nitre, so is he that singeth songs to a heavy heart. Right? In other words, there's a place for common sense and decency when we're trying to be encouraging to one another. It just takes a little bit of wisdom. So these three areas we've talked about, right? Marriage, husband and wife, parents and kids, and friends and neighbors. A happy family, encouraging friends and good neighbors, those are tremendous blessings from God that not everybody enjoys. So we want to make sure that we do our part to make those blessings a reality for us, for all of us, and in the lives of others. Basic common sense. This is not it's not rocket science to show sensitivity. Okay? It's not rocket science. Anybody can do that. That's being controlled by the Holy Spirit. All right. Okay.